Easy on the Podcast, right here on Movie City News. Sorry for the delay in podcasts, Oscar time and all that. But today we got Andy Fickman on. He's the director of the upcoming remake, Race to Witch Mountain, which comes out March 13th. So let's talk to Andy about it.
So tell me a little bit about how you got started, you know, making movies. Tell me a little bit about that.
I grew up in Texas and really loved, you know, I just saw every movie. I was that kid at the mall every weekend and saw every movie the minute it opened and saw it on television. And I was getting involved in a lot of theater and starting to direct theater around somewhere between high school and college, and really helping me, you know, maybe learn a little bit more of the skills of working with actors, working with story, moving pieces around. And when I graduated college, I moved out to L.A. And actually got into, as much as I always wanted to write and direct, I sort of started from an executive position and eventually producing. So I sort of learned the business, like almost all aspects of the business, before I ever got to direct my first feature. And I had started a theater company in L.A., and so I was getting a chance to work with great actors. Everybody was sort of unknown, but it was like Molly Shannon and Anne Heche and Ron Livingston and John Lee Hancock, who wrote and directed The Rookie and The Alamo. And so I was surrounding myself with really wonderfully creative people. And as an executive, at the time I was working for Gene Wilder. We had a production company called Palmel Productions, and then Bette Midler had a production company called All Girl Productions. And so both of them were great supporters of theater and great supporters of what I was trying to do. And so by the time it rolled around, I think I had been on sets enough that you can, you know, you start looking and learning. And I've been a producer on a movie called Anaconda with Jennifer Lopez and Cube, and that was a great experience. And the director of that movie, Lucho Llosa, who had done Sniper and Specialist, Lucho was very kind to sort of allow me to, you know, sit at the monitor and, again, absorb everything that I could absorb.
Right. Wow. Well, Anaconda, you know, is kind of one of my guilty pleasure movies.
I love that.
And you know, how do you go about producing a movie like that? You know, like, do you have did you sit down with the director and you guys come up with basically like the tone of the film? Because the script, I imagine, was probably more straightforward than the actual final film.
Yeah, you know, it was, I had just left Bette Midler's production company and had gone to a new company run by a really great woman, Berna Hera. And she started this company, Middle Fork. At the time it was called Cinema Line, but eventually became Middle Fork. And my job as sort of, you know, heading up development was to find material. And an agent friend of mine, William Morris, slipped me the script to Anaconda, and I read it on a Friday. It was going to go out onto the town wide on a Monday. And, you know, it was sort of Jaws with a giant snake, in the sense that, you know, somewhere between Tremors and Jaws, there's this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And we bought it. We gave it to Columbia, where we had a deal. And it moved from there very rapidly. And then, you know, it was my first opportunity to sort of, you know, they always call it the baby producer moment, where you're getting your feet wet and you're kind of juggling, you know, your job in terms of representing the production company and going through all aspects of a physical production. And, you know, making the snake, back then, 1996, 97, CGI cost about $100,000 a second. You know, so what we've learned today is significantly more easy, user-friendly than then. And so, you know, we had gone to Walt Conti, who had created the whales for the Free Willy movies, and was sort of a products genius, and he helped us build, you know, and create and design the 40-foot and the 25-foot snake. And it was a learning process. Tonally, I think a lot of the movie, with some great writers, Cash and Epps, who had done Top Gun, really helped shape it. And with our writers, I think that, you know, there was a certain tone that was probably more action, and maybe more straightforward. And then once you start casting, you get somebody with such a great personality like John Boyd in there, and Eric and Ice Cube and Owen Wilson and Jennifer Lopez and Jonathan Ive, before you know it, a lot of what you, and certainly what I've learned as a director, a lot of what, you know, a lot of half the battle of anything in a movie is casting. And when you put those personalities together, tonally, all of a sudden your movie becomes a lot more fun. And you know, consistently, I just had lunch with Cube the other day, and we were just laughing about the movie, and I was talking to Stoltz, and I talk all the time, and we, tonally, you know, you sometimes have to take a step back when you look at your finished product and be like, that is a really cool cast. And when you're individually putting the pieces together, you're like, oh, that's a great actor. I wonder how he'll work in that mix. So we got lucky on that movie, and I think when we were in the editing room, and Lucho, our director, I think, realized early on he had some real gems. And I think as he was looking at stuff as well, smiling and thinking, you know what, this is actually maybe good if we keep Lincoln. Maybe good if we allow John Boyd to do this little extra moment. So it ended up, you know, we were pleased that everybody had fun with the movie, which is, you know, like almost in any movie, the goal is to entertain.
Right. Well, you know, it's interesting because you're talking about how at that time, you know, CGI was so expensive, and it seems like now there's actually kind of like a movement to get back towards practical effects. And I was wondering if you saw any of that when you were making your recent film, Race to Witch Mountain.
You know, 100%, because, and by simply choice, when we started talking about doing it, and I was in post on my last movie for Disney, with Dwayne Johnson, was The Game Plan, and when they had come to me about doing Race to Witch Mountain, and I read the script and we talked, and I was a huge fan of the original a series of films. My pitch to Disney was, I'm kind of interested in this, but what I'm interested in this is as a 70s action movie. And by that, it was much more about what would Steve McQueen do, you know, no CGI, which means you're doing a road movie, you gotta drive. You gotta have all your stuff as practical as can be. And I got the stuff behind all the Bourne movies, because I always felt like, especially in a lot of the driving sequences, you know, it always felt very real with what they had Matt Damon going through, and certain cars built for that sort of camera work. And they were great, and everybody sort of really rose to the occasion. And I think from our DP on down, I think everybody just had fun that wherever we could solve it in camera, let's solve it in camera. And certainly we have plenty of CGI, and we certainly have our effects as a sci-fi movie like that. But a lot of things that normally would have been given over to CGI, we went out of our way to make sure that wasn't the case.
So were you a big fan of the series of films growing up? Because I hadn't really been aware of them until I heard about your film coming out. So why don't you tell me a little bit about how, you know, you got involved in the project, and, you know.
Yeah, I remember growing up and loving Escape to Witch Mountain and Return to Witch Mountain, and especially on Escape, when I saw it, Escape came out in 75, so it predated, you know, Star Wars, Close Encounters, E.T., all of the great movies that really unleashed this sort of, you know, fervent love of movies for me, as well as just spectacle. Like, it was really, you know, you got to see these great things happening with kids and, you know, all the magic that they were doing. And so it stuck with me. And I think my first crush, like movie crush, was on the girl, Kim Richards, who played Tia in that movie. So it was a really happy memory for me. And ultimately, by the time Disney did come to me and said, you know, there was discussions about, do you remake the original from the book, do you? And I think most of us, myself, the producers, we really didn't want to remake the original because I think it had such a warm spot for us that remaking the original seemed less interesting versus 30 years later kind of exploring the mythology of what that world was. Mm. And that became sort of an easy sell. And then wanting to be, for people like me who are fans of the original, wanting to give a lot of stuff in the movie, you know, enough Easter eggs for those people that they'd be happy. So it was all about tracking down the original two kids, Kim Richards and Ike Eisenman, and convincing them to come aboard for this new journey and to have a place in our film and our mythology. And that was great fun. Matter of fact, having them on the set, I think the first time they showed up, both of them, and they hadn't seen each other really in a while either. And, but the first time to have them on, and to see the cast just go crazy and the crew, there was such a love for them. And so it's been a really, really nice feeling.
So your last two films have been with, Dwayne Johnson and, yeah. So what do you think makes the two of you work so well together, you know, or do you guys have, like, a comfort factor there, you know, like, where you know, where each of you knows, you know, what to expect from one another, or are you just a big fan of his talent?
He knows I can kick his butt in wrestling, so that's what it all comes down to.
Ooh,
I can
big control. Words, big words.
You know, the first time I met Dwayne, I remember really clearly having seen him on hosting Saturday Night Live. Mm-hmm. And I thought he was hysterical when he hosted, and I thought it was a combination of hosting Saturday Night Live and I think seeing him in Be Cool, where I was like, man, this guy's really funny and really willing to go there. And I had just come off directing Amanda Bynes and She's the Man, and Amanda, you know, that was an opportunity to work with a real comedic actress and a really funny David Cross and Julie Haggerty. Like, I was working with all these, you know, comedic actors. Mm-hmm. So my expectations were, if I'm going to do another comedy, you know, oh boy, I want to make sure I'm working with somebody who can play in that world. And I think 2 minutes, 3 minutes into conversation, he immediately started asking me if I liked Elvis Presley, and I grew up in Texas loving Elvis, and we just sort of bonded. And then on the set, you know, the challenge is, I think for any director and any actor, is to find a rhythm with each other, because you are, you know, my job is just sort of help guide and steer and help bring the vision to life, and you want the actor to run with that and then give it all the extra stuff that's in their head that's going to be so much, you know, so magical. And from the first day of filming, we just connected. And when, again, when it was time to start talking about casting on Race, where you needed to go find a, you know, the lead was sort of, he's an ex-con who drives a cab, and he's kind of a complete badass. It's very easy to see, like, who do you know, actor-wise, who kind of fits that bill? And he and I went to lunch and pitched it to him, and he signed on in 2 seconds.
Yeah, well, I actually, you know, I was a fan of his on SNL also. I thought he really showed, you know, a great comedic chops, if you will. And I really feel like, you know, there hasn't been a movie yet, I think, that really, like, has perfectly captured the amount of charisma he has. You know, I think he's been on the cusp of making that, you know, big leap. And I don't know if he's quite gotten there yet, you know.
I think that as audiences have gotten further and further away from, you know, thinking of him from his past career and then sort of embracing the sort of new side of him, I think it becomes, you know, easier and easier, because I think that he, you know, he comes to the table with so much fresh energy. And, you know, if an actor had not, he does have such a specific, you know, MO from his past, and he's also built, you know, in a lot of ways, you know, it's hard to find, you know, like in this movie, I had to find guys that had to beat up on Dwayne. You're physically finding guys, you know, imagine what the casting call looks like to find that guy who, standing next to Dwayne, you believe, yes, Dwayne would feel intimidated by that guy. And so I think as projects come together for Dwayne, and certainly I think that what I'm excited about with Race to Witch Mountain is I feel we've offered kind of for a lot of his fans, you know, the people who enjoyed Game Plan and enjoyed his letting loose and the comedy of that, and then people who really miss his action, where we've really kind of made this just nothing but a big action movie. I think that our goal here is to deliver for his fans a kind of a big walloping punch of an awful lot of things that they're looking for.
Well, I think he's a throwback actor in a way, you know, to not, you know, but to like the action films of the 80s, you know. I mean, he's coming up at a really strange time for action films, you know, with the Bourne films, and, you know, it seems like the action stars today don't necessarily have like the big muscles, you know, and the quips, and that's what he brings to the table. And I think if he had come up in the 80s, he would have been as big a star as Schwarzenegger, you know?
100%. And I think it's a really insightful comment about saying how, you know, these action stars have changed because of movies like Bourne and everything, where there really is a new breed of action, a new taste for action, and I think that Dwayne is that throwback. And I think that, again, finding, you know, there's a little bit of magic in a bottle in the 80s when you've kind of had that combination of multiple, you know, Schwarzenegger and Stallone. You kind of had multiple people starting to do a lot of that. And so here we're hoping, again, with Race, that it gives a little bit of that type of flavor and taste. And those are certainly the movies I grew up loving. And I think I think Dwayne's in a very similar position too.
Yeah, well, I wanted to go back to the movies you grew up loving, actually. So, you know, when you were growing up and you were going to the mall every weekend to see the movies, what were some of the ones, some of the experiences that stuck out the most?
Definitely, you know, I would definitely have my, those movies like Jaws and Star Wars and Animal House and Stripes and Caddyshack, those movies all stuck out. And then I was a huge Irwin Allen fan, so anytime from Poseidon Adventure to
Towering Inferno,
any airplane movie in which an airplane did something ridiculous, I was in. I'm like, Jack Lemmon's going to fly that plane, and it doesn't matter if that plane's landing underwater or not.
He was the original Sully, yeah.
I used to love that stuff so much. And I was also, you know, like, I loved every, you know, whether it was Clint Eastwood or whether it was, you know, the Smokey and the Bandit movies, or, you know, it was a lot of great sort of escapist fare where I would come out of there just pumped up. And then I'd get lucky because I'm like, you know, they'd have those, I think in Texas we had, like, it was called the $1 Million Movie at like 3 o'clock after school. Saturday, but they were always showing things like Dirty Dozen and Magnificent Seven and Guns of Navarone, and boy, I'd come home from school and plop down in front of the TV and catch one of those movies, and I couldn't get more excited. Like, I would just be like, man, did you see that one? Or John Wayne and the Cowboys. So my taste buds really, I think, grew out of just a lot of, you know, I used to call them mall movies, where, you know, the mall was packed. And even now, when I look at, you know, Friday the 13th opening this week, I vividly remember being, you know, at the mall to watch the original Friday the 13th. And then I was, like, I had this memory of, like, the date I had for Friday the 13th 3D, her reaction when the arrow went in his eye, and, like, you know, I was like, this is the greatest moment in cinema ever. So I saw my buddy Valentine a couple of weeks ago, and I remember having a conversation with a bunch of friends of mine where I'm arguing the merits of the original My Bloody Valentine, and everyone's looking at me like I'm insane, and I'm like, seriously, don't you remember though in the original? I'm definitely that guy. After like a Smokey and the Bandit, we're all talking in discussion groups about why one was always better than two and three.
Well, I think that's the thing, you know, like, that, like, I love all movies, pretty much, any genre, but, you know, I think there hasn't been, lately, a lot of really good, you know, movies, you know, really big movies that were, you know, just fun. You know, I think lately some of the fun has been sucked out of, you know, big studio movies, and I don't know why that is. It seems like, you know, Towering Inferno and Poseidon Adventure in the 70s, and, you know, even, you know, the Die Hard films or Speed in the 90s, it seems like they just don't make them like they used to, almost. Everything's so serious now.
Yeah, well, I completely agree with you, and as a matter of fact, that was just what we would always talk about on the set, was like, what happened to just wanting to go and have fun in an action movie? What happened, like, it doesn't have to be so heavy, and there's certainly movies where I can appreciate why the heaviness of the drama was sort of added, and it really helped the movie, but yeah, I miss just going in and sitting in a theater and grabbing popcorn and having a thrill ride. And at the end, whether it was guilty pleasure or not, man, I just came out having fun and would talk to my friends and be like, hey, I'd like to go see that again. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of, you know, when we set out, that was just a big sort of mission for us. And what's been really satisfying is the times where we've done, you know, some of these test screenings and seeing the audience's reaction. And afterwards, you know, they do the focus group, and to hear literally 100% of them in that focus group talk about it in those terms, like, oh, it just reminded me of one of those movies I went to as a kid, or just reminded me, like, it was fun, kind of, whole family was having a good time, parents were happy, teenagers were happy, and I think if you go in with that attitude that, well, you know, we're not curing cancer here, we're literally entertaining, and I think that part of one of the gifts of film that can do is, you know, history has always shown whether it's tough economic times or times of war or, you know, times of great disaster, people just need that break, you know, almost like, you know, it's, they pay their money and they go in and for 2 hours the lights are out and they can escape somewhere. They can escape to a comedy, they can escape to an adventure, they can escape to a romance, but that's kind of, for a minute, you just give them a chance to sort of rejuvenate, to smile and come out of there and then go back to what real life is. And so sometimes I think it's the, you know, the banana on the banana, like you come in and you have so much heavy drama in, you know, your movie, and you're dealing with heavy drama in real life. It's almost like I just paid $10 to relive what I'm reliving on the outside right now.
I think the other thing is we need, you know, some people, you know, I find myself thinking this a lot of the times too. It's like, oh, this, you know, smaller movie is so great. I wish all movies were like this. But I don't, because, you know, you need the big, fun movies to provide a counterpoint. You know, like, how can you appreciate, you know, any movie if there wasn't the alternative? You know, so.
Yeah, when I was an executive, one of my favorite things to do was I'd go to Sundance and, you know, I'd start seeing the 8 o'clock in the morning movie and, you know, catch 6-7 movies that day up through the midnight movie. And my favorite days were the ones where I saw 7 completely different types of movies. I enjoyed the drama. I caught a documentary. I enjoyed a ridiculous comedy, and that was a unique sci-fi movie. Boy, I absolutely love that, because had it been the same of the same of the same, it all starts kind of feeling redundant. And I think it's hard to, like you said, I think it's hard to appreciate those. And even for me, I tried to, when I did my movie Reefer Madness, and it was at Sundance, and we got lucky, and we won, you know, the Audience Jury Award over at the Film Festival, and an Emmy, and all those things. That was a very kind of indie, crazy, made-for-showtime musical, culty-type film. The last thing I, and as soon as that movie came out, everybody offered me those movies. And I was like, I don't want to do Cocaine Madness now. Like, I just did Madness. And then after I did She's the Man, which was like, boy, that's as completely different as it could be. And after She's the Man, I got offered every teen girl comedy. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, what else to say in high school for a while? And I've run out of teen girl voices, so let's move on. And then it was a family comedy. And I'm like, all right. And then after that, I got offered every family comedy, which is why it was like, let's go do a sci-fi action movie. And I think that even for me, like an audience, I want to change it up wherever I can, you know, to keep challenging myself, but also to, you know, to find a different voice and a different way of saying something.
Yeah, well, I think that's great. And so I just want to get you out of here on this one, which is something I ask everybody, and that is, what is your favorite movie?
Boy, that is... Is that not the hardest? That's probably the hardest question.
I know. you can have a few. You can have a few, though.
I have a few, because I always say, like, in every genre, I could probably pull out. So I'll cheat and say, if I think, you know, horror films, I'm very much a Omen, Rosemary's Baby, Exorcist guy. If I think sci-fi, I am... very much a diehard Star Wars, Close Encounters guy. If I think comedy, it's Animal House, Stripes, probably in a big way. Action movies, Raiders of the Lost Ark. When that movie came out, I think I saw it four times in a day. I just wanted to see that guy get shot every time he pulled out the sword. So that definitely was for kind of the war epics, the Dirty Dozen movies, Where Eagles Dare, Guns of Navarone, those type westerns, Magnificent Seven, Wild Bunch, Big Time Wild Bunch, Butch and Sundance. So there's a good laundry list.
That's a pretty good swath, and for my listeners, that's a very good list of films that you should see. So,
like I tell people, and I know it's hard because we have so many options now, you know, that we can look at, and there's so many venues to look at material, and so sometimes it's easy when I talk to a friend, they'll tell me they haven't gone back and seen, like, The Wild Bunch, and I'm like, dude, you gotta see The Wild Bunch because you gotta see what everyone else is viewing. You watch The Wild Bunch and see Sam Peckinpah, and you'll have a greater appreciation of what Tarantino does. You'll have a greater appreciation of what Walter Hill did. So I think that it's always about sometimes finding, you know, directors. I can sit and spend an entire, you know, weekend, you know, just watching Hitchcock films, mesmerized by the subtlety of how he moves the camera and how beautiful he lights those scenes and how much tension he gets from those elements without it having to be, you know, banging it over the head stuff. It's a great learning lesson, you know, to whether you're interested in filmmaking or it's a hobby or just a cinephile who loves movies. Boy, go back and watch those older movies, and I just think it makes the experience that much greater.
Definitely. All right. Well, thank you so much for doing this. And Race to Witch Mountain opens March 13th.
That's it.
All right. Well, I will be there. So
I appreciate you taking the time with us, too.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Right.